Hi, I'm Gina Jordan, a host at WFSU Public Media. And today we're speaking of cold weather and people sleeping without any shelter. Jonna Coleman is executive director of the Big Bend Continuum of Care. That's Big Bend COC for short. Hi, Jonna.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate you. What does your job entail?
So the COC is an agency that is recognized by HUD as a collaborative agency. So we oversee policies, strategic planning, and partnerships for agencies that are seeking to, the ultimate goal is to end homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually get funding, and then we are a pass-through of that funding to local agencies.
Okay. Agencies like the Kearney Center?
The Kearney Center, Family Promise, which is the Hope Community, our family shelter. In the past, we've funded organizations like CCYS. We currently fund ECHO, Ability First, several organizations that are delivering services to those people who are unhoused.
Yeah. How many counties do you serve?
We serve 8 counties: Leon, Jefferson, Gadsden, Wakulla, Franklin, Liberty, Taylor, Madison.
That's impressive. You did good. There are a lot of COCs, right?
There are 27 in the state of Florida.
Yeah.
And the Big Bend COC is the largest by area size, not by population.
I was going to say, is that because this is more of a rural area?
Yeah. So we do cover the 7 rural counties that's around Leon County.
Yeah. Do you have an estimate for the number of people who are unhoused in Tallahassee and Leon County on average?
So it's a little bit difficult because we do the count. It's coming up. Definitely would love to be back to talk about how people can get involved in that. But our point in time count last year gave us a little bit less than 700 individuals who were unsheltered.
Okay. So tell me how the Big Bend COC works with the Kearney Center and other partners like that in Tallahassee.
So a couple of ways. We do provide funding opportunities to local agencies that provide specifically for the Kearney Center emergency shelter dollars. We provide rapid rehousing dollars, homeless prevention dollars, and then street outreach funds. But specifically outside of funding, we collaborate a lot. So you can get a lot more done when there are more people involved. And so we collaborate on community strategies. No one agency can do this alone. To get someone housed who may be staying at the Kearney Center, it may take 8 other agencies, all pitching in and finding one place where they fit in to serve someone.
I know Kearney Center seems to be the main one, but there are several places like that in town, aren't there?
Yes. So we have the Kearney Center, who is our single individual shelter. So those people who are over 18. CCYS has a shelter for children ages 10 to 17 who are unaccompanied or displaced from their families. And then there is also Hope Community, which is our family shelter.
Are there more individuals or families winding up in shelters, would you say?
Individuals are going to be the largest number because Kearney Center is our largest shelter. But we are seeing an increase in families who are experiencing homelessness.
I can't help but think about someone young who winds up in that situation. Can you give us an idea of how that would happen?
Several reasons. Of course, there's generational poverty. Where someone just, lacks the family structure, economic structure of being able to afford sustainable housing. And then they also don't have that family connection and support system. But people become homeless for elderly people. A spouse dies and their income is cut in half. Someone loses a job and all of a sudden they can't pay the rent. So there are a plethora of reasons outside of, everyone's drinking or, doing drugs and they end up homeless. There are a plethora of reasons, mental health, all kinds of reasons that someone becomes homeless.
Yeah. Is the Kearney Center often full in places like it, would you say?
Yes. So around the country, we do know that emergency shelter beds are lacking. And so in some areas, there is also, a first come, first serve. You often see that in larger cities like New York. or, you know, Atlanta, those places where they're just not enough shelter beds for the number of people who are experiencing homelessness.
Yeah. Can you walk us through the process of someone who has nowhere to go? And we're talking about a normal, like it's 70 degrees, there's no storm coming. What do they do to wind up getting into, say, the Kearney Center? And is that a 24-hour thing?
Yes. So if someone shows up normally at the Kearney Center, I believe before 8 p.m. would be considered their normal intake time. They would just go in and check in. If there's a bed available, they would be given that bed. But someone would probably likely learn about the Kearney Center or other types of resources like that from someone else experiencing homelessness. So there is a network of communication. And if someone finds themselves on the streets, then they would likely talk with someone else.
I want to talk more about that because we've had a cold spurt. And lately we've heard about these cold night shelters being opened. Can you tell us when those are activated and how they work?
Yes. We work closely with the Leon County Emergency Management and with Leon County Health Department. And so we are briefed from the National Weather Center when there is cold weather expected to be 35 degrees for 4 hours or longer before daylight. So on those nights, we all gather, the emergency management sends out a coordination call, and we gather, and the health department notifies us that they would activate cold night shelter due to that weather being potential for bodily harm. At that time, our shelters go into cold night shelter operations, which means that people are allowed to sleep on cots. And so there is somewhat of an overflow of seasonal, what we call seasonal beds that are available at that time.
I've always wondered if volunteers fan out to look for people, if police help with that. Is that the case?
So what we do is there on our coordination call, there are people from multiple agencies. So the police department, other entities that aren't necessarily connected with homelessness are on those calls. They're also a part of our mail out. All the news outlets are a part of our email out. And so once we're off of that call, it is actually my responsibility to make sure that there is a press release and information that goes out to everyone notifying them of the cold night shelter and the duration of those shelters, what times we'll do intakes and things like that. We also have our street outreach teams that consist of our partner agencies as well as our host deputies who go out the day of. Usually, sometimes we try to plan in the day before so that we can make sure that anyone who may be unsheltered knows that the shelters are going to be opening for cold night.
Great. And sometimes that involves even using hotel rooms, right?
It can. We have been limited on hotel funding. And if it is a football night or, you know, one of those weekends where hotel rooms are astronomically high, then we can't provide those. But in the event that there is funding available, we can. I do know that some of our agencies have used hotels, but our thought process is that it is more cost effective for our emergency shelters to use our cots for temporary sheltering. That way we can reserve some of those funds for other opportunities.
Yeah. I think about this because I'm coming into work in the middle of the night. It's 30-something degrees, and still I'm seeing people sleeping on the sidewalk. And I can't imagine that, first of all. But if someone in that situation at some point at midnight realizes it's too much for them, is there any place they can go?
Yes. So law enforcement often brings people in. So if someone sees a police car, they can flag them down. And our agencies do work, specifically the Kearney Center will work with law enforcement officers to have someone be available to drop them off at the Kearney Center.
I've also wondered, do people maybe not want to go a lot of the time? Yeah, they just don't want to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A state law took effect in October. It says that a municipality cannot allow anyone to sleep on public property. Mm-hmm. It says that municipality may designate a particular spot for public sleeping or camping. That location has to meet requirements and get state approval. And my understanding is that as far as lawsuits go, this isn't technically being forced until we get into the new year. But after that, municipalities can be sued for violating this law. So what can you tell us about what happens then in Tallahassee and Leon County?
So At that point, we still don't know. It's still uncertain. There hasn't been a precedent for a case like this. So we are still that is still in the unknown. What I will tell you is that for us on our end, it is very hard to determine that municipality. So, you know, we have such broad areas. So when we're talking about a public area, are we talking about an area that is Department of Transportation? Are we talking about an area that belongs to Leon County and how or where that divide is? We have tried to work to notify our clients who may be close to or in some of those situations that we need to try to work on getting them housing. And we are still there to respond. So there is a clause in the law that allows for some coordination with that person who may be identified as sleeping in a public area. And our hope is that we can get them very quickly either into emergency shelter or into some other type of housing opportunity before anything happens.
Yeah. Thank you for that, because it feels like maybe there isn't an answer yet. Is there even a way to prepare for this?
Yeah. You know, a lot of other cities are doing a lot of things. There have been ordinances passed. There have been strategic plans that have been put into place. And I really think that a lot more just, you know, governments and municipalities are just kind of in the zone of waiting to see what would be the best practice.
Yeah. This seems to be a civil issue versus a criminal one. Does that sound right?
Correct.
So people can be fined and potentially they could still be arrested if they were on property and they wouldn't leave. Does that sound right?
So more like trespassed, which does eventually. So if someone is trespassed and they show back up, then that could potentially lead to arrest or fines and things like that. And so I will say that Sheriff McNeil has been very instrumental in working with our agencies and our people to figure out ways that we can work through issues concerning trespassing and putting people in jail because they are experiencing homelessness. You know, the host deputies came out of potentially what could have potentially been an ordinance, and they have been instrumental. They have worked very close beside us, and we don't always get things right, but we are definitely trying and, you know, working through whatever difficulties we have.
Yeah. Even with all of the unknowns, in your role, do you think this law will ultimately be helpful or hurtful or make any difference?
So I will say this. We have to, there's a fine line between something being detrimental, and often even if that is not the potential cause, you know, what happens when someone gets a trespass is that when we try to get them housed, that may be more difficult because now they have an arrest and that may be very recent. And, you know, it may, when someone's introduced to the judicial system, like, you know, it kind of reoccurs. And so I think that we cannot arrest our way out of homelessness. There has to be a method to the madness, and it's going to take community collaboration and additional funding and more housing for us to get out of homelessness. Our ultimate solution to homelessness is housing for everyone.
Yeah. There are definitely a lot of layers to this. And one of the things that people don't like about the law is that it really doesn't seem to address the root causes of homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
Can you weigh in on, and I know there are a myriad of those, but could you weigh in on that?
Yeah. So I think, you know, one of the main focuses that we see for someone who may be experiencing homelessness outside of just economics is mental health. And we are not addressing any type of mental health conditions with this law. We are not addressing housing with this law. We are only addressing a location. And often what we see is when we ask someone to move along from one location, they just end up in another location. And so theoretically, a lot of our publicly owned properties may be woods. They may be outside of the common eye. So they may be in hidden locations. And what you do when you force someone out of those locations is you force them to be more present. You force them to be on private property. You're going to, so what is the fallout to that, but we aren't addressing mental health. We aren't addressing the lack of affordable housing. We aren't addressing people's needs with this law. And so while the attempt may have been to engage municipalities, I believe, and make them become more responsible for homelessness, which I think is it could be a good thing. We also have the downfall that ultimately falls on our clients.
Yeah.
And that is the sad part.
Yeah. I was also thinking how we're close to the state line and potentially you've got, people who are transients who are coming through and don't have a clue about the law, which is another layer.
I will say everybody knows.
Everybody knows.
Everybody knows. I think there's a network of information that is spread. People will know where the shelters are that don't have heavy requirements to stay there or to get in. So word travels and it travels pretty far. So I am trusting that most people will know about the law. What most concerns me are the people who may be adversely affected.
Mm-hmm. And can you weigh in on that some more?
I think that homelessness is real and nobody is asking to be homeless. And there's not always an immediate solution. And what this forces COCs and agencies to do is to rapidly move someone. And it could be someone who was potentially getting services who chooses to go into hiding and now they can't get those services because they've been displaced.
Gotcha. What do our listeners need to know about people who are unhoused?
That it could be them or someone that they are very close to. When we think about the elderly population, lots of people are becoming homeless because a spouse has passed away and their income is cut. And so when someone passes away after a month or so, their income is cut. And now, what two incomes used to do, you have to do on one income. So it very well could be a mom, an aunt, a father, an uncle, a brother who is faced with this, and that we are all just out here trying to do the best that we can do. We know that stereotypes are there and there are, confirmed stereotypes, of course, but the majority of people who are experiencing homelessness are just waiting for the opportunity to be housed.
Wow. Yeah. Likewise, what can you say about the groups that are doing their best to try to help folks get shelter?
Keep doing it. Keep one person at a time. It may not feel like a lot in the moment when we are housing one person a week or three people a month, but eventually those numbers add up. And for those agencies that are preventing people from becoming homeless, you are doing a rock star job. Because if we can catch people before they become homeless, we are doing our system a world of service. It is good that we can keep people in housing.
What are your thoughts about people who randomly see someone sleeping on the sidewalk? And I've seen this happen. They want to go up to them and help them. I mean, there's always the unknown. Like, mm-hmm. Can I take you food and talk to you? What are your advice to those folks?
If you're comfortable talking with someone who is experiencing homelessness, definitely build that relationship. Sometimes people just need a listening ear. You could be the person who, kind gesture kind of keeps them at a good place. And if there's potential to provide them with a pamphlet or any type of guidance about services that they may not know about, I would definitely say do it. But there is a level of public safety. So do it with caution. I'm not asking people to, go out of their way, but people who are experiencing homelessness are still human. They have feelings, emotions, and just want to, be like anyone else.
Yeah. What kind of donations are needed for the Kearney Center, for the Big Bend Continuum of Care? Tell people how they can help.
So I know that each of the shelters renders their own kind of list this time of year. I know the Kearney Center was doing a drive for linens. They were desperately in need of towels and twin size sheet sets, blankets, things like that, as well as Hope Community. But there's always opportunities to provide meals or gift cards. We are going into our point in time season, and so we are looking for volunteers who want to participate in the count. We are also would like to provide the people who we survey, who will be people experiencing homelessness, with gift cards of $10 to either a grocery store or a restaurant for them to get a hot meal. So those are always good. You can always call our office, and if there is a specific thing that someone wants to donate, sometimes we have people call and say, where can I donate a couch, and we can connect them with an agency of someone who may be getting housed, or, you know, those types of things. We're happy to help facilitate and coordinate anything that anyone wants to donate to the right and get them to the right agency.
Great. And tell us a little more about that point in time survey. When is that coming out?
Yes. So our point in time count is January, the week of January 27th of 2025. It is a time where volunteers actually come out and go out with our street outreach teams and our lead surveyors and actually get to speak with people who are experiencing homelessness. We have a training that they'll attend, and we give them all the tools that they would need to feel comfortable. And they get to go out and survey people and ask them about how they became homeless and what they need to get out of the situation.
And the focus is on finding people who are on the streets, or do you go to shelters to do that as well?
So our shelter data is collected through our HMIS database, so we don't go into the shelters. But if there is a non-participating agency, we can go into those agencies. So an agency who may be serving people experiencing homelessness but do not participate with our HMIS system, we can go into those agencies. But yes, so at 7 a.m. every morning, we will have volunteers show up, and they will go out and canvass the streets. We'll canvass parking lots and, you know, dilapidated buildings and things like that, looking for people who may be experiencing homelessness. The goal of the point in time count is to get an accurate count of what homelessness looks like on any one night.
Mm-hmm. For more information, folks can go to Big Bend Continuum of Care's website.
Yes, so it's bigbendcoc.org.
Perfect. Jonna Coleman with the Big Bend Continuum of Care, thank you so much for what you do and for being here.
Thank you for having me.